Years ago, I was having an extremely silly exchange with Swamiji and gave a rather cheeky, humorous response to a very simple question he asked. And afterwards, I stopped and asked him the question. I said, "Swamiji, what is the sense of humor? Where does it come from?" And his response was more serious than my question. He said, "To a certain extent, a sense of humor is the mark of a spiritual understanding. Because in order to be able to make jokes about things, you have to stand back and be able to see them from a slightly different perspective." And Swamiji has often commented that one characteristic of fanatics is that they tend not to have a sense of humor. And if they have a sense of humor, it's not kind. It's not based on a sort of shared sense of the absurd, because their fanatical attitude keeps them so focused on a small reality that they can never stand back and see the whole picture. So in keeping with that, I've heard a couple of good jokes lately. And it seemed to me like a good way to start the new year would be with a little bit of lighthearted laughter. Because if anything, beyond devotion, I think the love of God and the ability to laugh at ourselves are really what get us through. The first one I heard was this. Two atoms were walking down the street together, and one of them stopped and said, "I think I lost an electron." And the other atom said, "Are you certain?" He said, "Yes, I'm positive." And then two old codgers were sitting by the fire on a cold winter night, early winter, and it began to snow and snow. And one said to the other, "Boy, I hope we don't have the same snow we had last year." The other codger said, "Not a chance, it's all melted." And the third one actually won some prize for being the best joke ever. And it was Sherlock Holmes and Watson had gone camping together. And they set up their tent and they had their dinner and then they crawled into their sleeping bags. And then in the middle of the night, Sherlock, you know, pokes Watson in the ribs and he said, "Look up at that star-filled sky. When you look at that, what do you think?" And Watson said, "Well, I think how small a single individual is, how vast the cosmos is, it makes me wonder about creation." And Sherlock turned to Holmes and said, Sherlock turned to Watson and said, "Dr. Watson, you fool, what I think is that someone's stolen our tent." Our first reading for the new year is always about the word. Master and Swamiji, they want us to begin right where everything begins, with is the vibration of Om and the power of creation. In the beginning was the word, and there was nothing else but that. There was nothing else but this sound, even just the capacity of just being able to exchange our thoughts back and forth without the advancement of direct transference of thought, which for the most part we don't have all the time. We have to translate our consciousness into something audible and visible, or else there's nothing, there's no experience that we're having. And this is the experience of creation. Swamiji writes elsewhere about this. It's very interesting that there's four gospels about the life of Christ. And the other three gospels all begin with something relating to how that soul ended up in that body. It's the history of the lineage of Jesus being of the house of David and how it was so important in the teaching of the coming of the Messiah among the Jewish people who were so exact about these things that they could prove that he was of the house of David as he was meant to be. Or they talk about the miraculous events that came, Zacharias being struck dumb in the temple and his wife Elizabeth, who was barren, having the son John the Baptist, who is the one who is going to pave the way for the coming of the Messiah. I mean, all of these are thrilling stories. There's nothing wrong with them at all. But they're all about the individual body that lived on this planet under the name of Jesus and acted out what is really one of the most dramatic stories. Swamiji once referred to the life of Jesus as the most dramatic story, the greatest story ever told, which is a rather popularized phrase. And when I said to Swami, I sort of asked him, essentially, why are you using such a cliche? You know, you call it the greatest story ever told. And Swamiji just silenced me with his reverence. He said, "Yes, don't you think it is?" Just like that. He's been talking a lot about the life of Christ because he wrote Revelations of Christ recently, his most recent book, which he describes in an odd way. Just, I heard him say this a few days ago. He said, in many ways, he said, he considers it his most important book. He said, not his most enduring, because the usefulness of that book is going to be short-lived, relatively speaking. His commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, for example, he said, will live essentially as long as this round of creation lives, because the Gita has been around for so many hundreds of years, and it will always be there as a statement of truth. But Jesus' teachings, as Master says emphatically, have been crucified and destroyed by the institutionalization of religion, which completely takes away the individual's capacity to have a direct relationship with God. That's what institutional religion is. It takes that which is a direct revelation, it reduces it to dogma and theology that people can argue about, and they can study, and they can be scholars, and they can all have opinions, and then the church becomes all-powerful, and it has to sort of start explaining how these things work. And once you start down the road, you know, of explaining any part of it, you have to start explaining all of it. If you're baptized, if you're saved by being baptized, well, then what happens if you're not baptized? Well, you go to this particular place. Well, what if you're a baby and you never had a chance to be baptized? Well, then this is what happens. Is there any redemption for that? Perhaps, maybe this is what happens. And you just start down this road. Poor Self-Realization Fellowship has also started it down that road. And I had what I have to call only, I think the malicious pleasure is the only way you can describe it, of with Karen and others working on a website, which we did at the end of the legal disputes we were having with them. We decided we would put the dispute with SRF squarely where it belonged, as a theological argument. It was not ever meant to be a legal dispute. It was theology, different interpretations. And I got to analyze some of their writings. And there was a certain point in the footnote of one of their books where they said that this line of gurus will bless all those who faithfully and regularly practice Kriya Yoga. So, of course, I didn't write all of this, but I enjoyed it. Okay, what does faithfully mean? What does regularly mean? You know, and how bad can I be and still get away with it? And what if I'm faithful and regular for a certain period of time, but then I have a lapse, and then maybe during that lapse something bad happens to me? Is the blessing of the gurus not active at that point? And then does it become active when I start again? You know, because once you start down that road of taking that which is not definable with human logic and starting to define it, you end up, well, we see where we end up. We end up with all these rules and all these human things. And Swami writes about Revelations of Christ. I've had to read that book a number of times to really get what he's saying, because the message is enormous. Basically, he's saying the teachings of Jesus have nothing to do with the institutions that were founded in his name. He said the teachings of Jesus is a true master. He's an avatar of the absolute level of realization of any manifestation of God that has ever come to this world. And his consciousness will live forever and is a force for blessing for all those who receive him now and for all eternity, just like all the other great masters that have ever inhabited this planet. And then he goes to show how every single word that Jesus spoke was 100% consistent with every other word that was ever spoken by other true infinite messengers of God. And how, unfortunately, once an institution tries to define it, it corrupts it. And yes, I could speak about the help that institutional religions have given to people and so on, but that's not what my subject is here, nor was it Swami's when he wrote that book. And so what he's doing is he's doing what Master said. This is the second coming of Christ. Every Sunday on the Festival of Light, we say, Jesus appeared to the great Master Babaji. My people have forgotten the true message, which is inner communion. They're still serving each other, which is laudable. There's nothing wrong with selfless service. In fact, it's fundamental to spiritual progress. But the noble taper of inner communion has been lost. And so Swamiji has just emphatically, unequivocally, courageously, and unforgivingly is the only word I can use, just simply slashed the institutional concept to ribbons in order to liberate from it the true teachings of Christ. And this, of course, is an interesting reality that is presented. But there is one more fact on this, and I don't want to leave it. Swami has a chapter after he's just impersonalized the teachings of Jesus to such an extent. Then he has a chapter called, Still, Isn't Jesus Unique? Doesn't he have something special to offer us? And Swami says, oh, yes, yes, don't misunderstand. And then he goes on to say, and please understand the intimate personal relationship of Jesus as our personal Savior. That is the essence of the spiritual path. It is this individual, as Master called it so directly, making love to God. Every individual devotee, it's the most intimate and personal of relationships. God is everything to us, and he needs to come down into some personified form for us in our little human consciousness to be able to have a doorway through which we can walk. Otherwise, we stand in this vague confusion and don't know which direction to turn. And that's the role that Jesus played, and Swamiji described him more almost than any other master, he said. His life was his mission. Because of the times in which he lived, because of how dramatically he had to, as Swami put it, wrench the true teachings away from the grip that false teaching had on it. Because he came to the Jews, and the Jewish religion is a true religion. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. That's one of the greatest prayers of all time, speaking as it does of the underlying Om behind everything. Except it had become corrupted in the hands of priests who were into it only for their own power. And Jesus had to grab it away from them because, if nothing else, Jews have willpower. We know that. It's a characteristic of the people. And so Jesus had to put Judaism back on the right track. And that's what he came to do. He came for the lost tribes of Israel. That's what he was doing there. But at the same time, his personalness was just a window. And that's what John wants us to understand, because he had the deepest and the most transcendental grasp of the teaching from the beginning. In the beginning was the Word, and Word is sound. And when we go to the Sanatana Dharma, to the Indian side, and we speak of the various manifestations of the Spirit, sound, the sound of Om, the Amen, as they call it on the Western side, the Amin, as the they call it in the East also, but it's that same sound. It's not somebody's idea of what is, it's what the devotee actually literally in himself hears. Yesterday we were meditating here celebrating Master's birthday, and in the late morning we had been listening to Swamiji, his recorded stories of Master from the path, and then we were listening to Master's own voice, which is so powerful, and it just has such a resonating sound. Sometimes you can't penetrate the accent, but you can always hear that power. And one has to admit sometimes you almost shrink from that power sometimes. You want something a little more comforting. But the comfort of it is in the promise that we can rise to meet it. And in the middle of his speaking, and sometimes during our silences, it was during that time of the storm, and the thunder would come and you'd hear it sort of rolling in, and then it would crash. It was just for an hour or two, but it was thrilling. We were all pretending that it was an inner sound of the crash of Om. You know. One of my girlfriends once was meditating early in the morning, and she kept seeing all this flashing light. She lived out in Santa Cruz at that time, and she was always one who was always like to measure her spiritual progress, and she thought she was finally getting somewhere, and then later her landlord said, I hope I didn't disturb you. I was out at 5 a.m. with my flashlight checking the hot water heater. Oh, sigh, once again. Master said on one of the excerpts we were listening to from one of his talks yesterday, he was speaking of one of the disciples. No, it was in Swami's book, The Path. He was talking about one of the disciples. Master was praising the disciple who dug a cesspool for Master's desert retreat. Master would often make up jobs for people. Swamiji and Norman and some of the other monks built Master a whole swimming pool at his retreat at 29 Palms, which Swami says Master never used at all. But the idea of having it built kept all those monks there next to him at his ashram for months at a time, and they carefully built this whole swimming pool for Master. You never know what these great souls are doing. There's so many different levels to life. And Swami, in any case, Swami was talking about how this man dug the cesspool, and Master spoke of him later, and he said he He just started in the morning and he started digging that hole and he dug all day. And he never stopped to look how much progress he had made. And he said, and at the end of the day, he saw that he had dug this huge hole. Master said, that's how you should go on the spiritual path. Isn't that interesting? He said, just every single day, put out the very best effort you can and don't stop and stand back and ask, what kind of progress am I making? How am I advancing? True self-realization, you see, is self-forgetfulness. We think it's all this self-concern. We're always thinking about, am I doing this, am I doing that? But the very thought of I is the measure of our lack of progress. It's just a complete non-identification with the I. We just do what we have to do. That's sometimes in meditation, one has this expanded sense. Yesterday at the end, we listened first to Swamiji read the autobiography of a yogi chapter, The Experience in Cosmic Consciousness. Swamiji has made audio recordings of many of his own books and also of Autobiography of a Yogi. I strongly encourage you to get your hands on all of those. You can get them from Crystal Clarity. Because hearing Swamiji say these words, talking about the power of the word, you see, it's not that you only then get the meaning of the word itself, but you get the vibration of one who knows what those words mean. And so much of communication is not really a kind of dull, dry analysis of I say this and then someone else figures out what those words mean and put them together. So much of it is just a transference of consciousness. I had the experience when we were engaged in litigation a long time ago, from time to time, of being in a deposition. Deposition is such a strange experience because, especially in the depositions we had, because our instructions were, of course, to give as little information as possible. And so if they don't ask it, you don't answer it. So you listen extremely literally to what the attorney has actually asked you. And you don't do what normal human conversation is, which is you listen to see what they have really asked, you know, what they really want to know. You block out any possibility of what they really want to know, and you just tell them what they have asked. And you tell them very little of what you know. And it's just, it's ridiculous. But that's a whole nother subject. But it makes you realize how much of communication, how much of verbal communication has nothing to do with verbs. It only has to do with that transfer of consciousness. And so hearing the voice of Master, even sometimes when you can't quite catch the words, you're getting the transfer of consciousness. When Swamiji reads his own words, or Autobiography of a Yogi, you're getting the transfer of consciousness. It's a completely different experience than just taking it in with your eyes. It engages you much more. And so at the end, Swamiji was reading Experience in Cosmic Consciousness, which is Master's description. And of course, you know, Master made himself seem like such a humble seeking devotee upon whom all these things came as such a surprise. And it was true. Because once even a liberated master assumes the role of an avatar, even though in the beginning was the word and he is the Om vibration, he is the infinite spirit, nonetheless, he dons the costume and he plays the part. As Master himself said, inwardly, you never forget that you are free, but outwardly you play the game. And when he wrote Autobiography, he toned himself down. That's why the path, the second half of the path, and the other books subsequently Swami's written about Master are so vital to understanding him. Although Autobiography of a Yogi is, you just go word by word in that book, and that's enough. That'll keep you going for the rest of this incarnation and many to come. So Swami reads Experience in Cosmic Consciousness, and then the whole of the poem Samadhi, which these are the words on the wall and the poem is in the back, which was Master's effort to describe in words what it is to transcend this creation altogether. And then afterwards we put on Master's voice, chanting Om, Om. And then he says, Mighty Beloved, Cosmic Mother, over and over. We listened for about 20 minutes, that just sound, just moving like this. And it was just like the substance of one's whole being, every single cell, every little atom, began to vibrate with that Om sound. And somewhere dimly in the distance, there was this self and its little body and all its little, what Swami so lovingly calls, bundle of self-definitions, which is what we call ourselves, You know, we are the infinite spirit, and it's time for us to incarnate. And we go out like picking flowers in a field. Oh, I think I'll be a man. I think I'll be born in this country. I think I'll be tall this time. I think I'll have a beautiful wife. I think we'll have four sons. You know, we gather it all up. I'm good at music. I can think like this. I can do that. You know, like this. Then we get this big bouquet, and then we stand there and say, this is me. And then something happens, we take the time to listen to Master chanting Om. And we just hear. Master said when he chanted Om, instantaneously, amazing, instantaneously, the vibration went everywhere in creation. Isn't that something? Instantaneously, this time and space. We can say these things with our minds. It's an illusion. But Master saw it, experienced it as an illusion. Also in the path, it said in there, Master at the end of his life took some of the karma of his disciples onto his legs, and for a period of time his legs didn't work. He couldn't walk. And he described it as an astral, mostly demons were expressing their negative energy on his subtle body, but it also affected his physical body. What that actually means, I don't know. But that's how Master described it. And he was taking on the disciple of his karma, the karma of his disciples, just in the same way that Jesus was crucified, took onto his body. He was crucified for the salvation of those who received him. He took the karma that should have gone to them, and he took it on himself rather than having it strike them, because it wasn't necessary for their spiritual development for them to have to go through the consequences of behavior they set in motion before they became disciples. You see, that's what the guru does. He shelters us like an umbrella. And Master said, when he was talking about not being able to walk, he says, it's not so bad. Many people have feet, but they can't go everywhere. That's how Master put it. Master would go everywhere. What does the limitation of the body matter? And so yesterday when we were listening after meditating all day, and listening to the cosmic consciousness and the samadhi poem and the Om, and you know, it was just inescapable. It was just so insistent. There was no place that you could hide your consciousness from it. There was nothing to do but simply surrender to it. And when you surrendered to it, you began to go all over with Master. That's what our meditations are all about. That's what discipleship is all about, to go everywhere with Master. And then just a little dim part of you is vaguely conscious that you're still sitting in your body. And then you see, as I was saying, this little bundle of self-definitions, which seems so important to us, this little self, there it is with all its little jobs and all its little, you know, tendencies and the things we think of. It just looks, it's still there. It's still the same size. It hasn't really gotten any smaller. It's just in relationship to it, our own consciousness has gotten so much bigger. This is how Swami describes that the masters relate to the incarnation that they have. They still act. He describes this in Revelations of Christ, trying to tell people how Jesus could be an individual and the infinite at the same time. And even use the word, they act with ego will. They recognize the individuality that they're acting out, and they use that little ego they've assumed to move things forward. Jesus had to respond to his disciples and to the circumstances of his life, just as Master did, just as Swamiji does, just as all of us do. There are specific circumstances. We have families, we have jobs, we have problems we have to solve, things we have to do. We can't just be passive. The saints set us a very different example of dynamic, engaged will. But you see, they see just this little bit of ego moving forward and the self. You could just hear it in Master's voice, that with that, oh, mighty beloved, sound like that, just moving, that here is who we really are, liberated from all of that. That's the sound and the light our scripture is talking about today. Master talks about seeing it as the light that just takes over everything. St. John talks about it as the word. It was the only reality. This is a new year for us. This is a new time. Everything in our lives will just go on as it always goes on. The question is, shall we go on as we always go on? Or do we want to put a rock of determination into that river of ordinary life and say, I declare myself. I declare myself for the light. I declare myself for the Om. Yes, I will continue to use my little ego will to move this forward, but as let this be like the masters, as Swamiji describes, and just sort of watch the divine, even as he put it, enjoy the divine floating through us. That's how Swamiji, he's so enthusiastic about the things he does. Even the book Revelations, he says, it's my favorite book. Of all my books, he says, it's my favorite. I never finished that single thought. He said it's the most important because it's necessary to set the teachings of Jesus back on the right course. He said, but once that's done, you know, people will look at it as sort of a quaint thing, like, what was all the fuss about? Now we understand. We know, of course, that Jesus was and will always be a great master. What was all the fuss about? But he said, righting the ship, that's part of why Master came. Master was born at the request of Jesus to help straighten out the spirituality of the West. Will we be part of that? Will we give ourselves to that same great journey of self-realization that Master gave his life for and that all these great ones have given their life for? Will we take a big rock of our permanent determination, of our eternal commitment to transcend this little bundle of self-definitions and embrace the infinite? You see, the path of self-realization puts the responsibility completely in our hands. We come together for one reason only, because it strengthens our individual commitment. But no amount of sitting, even with other devotees, will change us unless we have made that commitment ourselves. Master spoke of Mount Washington. He said, lots of rats and mice inhabit this canyon too, but they're not making spiritual progress necessarily just from being here. Now, of course, a rat or a mouse doesn't have the nervous system to be able to perceive infinity. But what he meant was mere external actions do not make the difference. It has to be deep within myself, deep within yourself. Am I tired of the confinement of just being me? Would I like to have the freedom of being one with the infinite? Let us begin now. This is what Master has come to bring us. This is the new year. We celebrated his birthday yesterday. We celebrated the birth of Christ not long before. But all of it is about the birth of infinity, the Word, the infinite, the Om, the light within us.